Disclaimer time. This is where I tell everyone to lighten up. It's just a podcast. Trading is like that roller coaster at the amusement park. Thrilling, unpredictable, and potentially stomach churning. What works for one person might leave another clutching their hat in the wind. Our hosts and guests, they're awesome, knowledgeable, full of insights, but we're not financial advisors. So don't rush to make any investment decisions based solely on our banter. Always consult with a professional or do your own research. Plus, let's face it, we like to have fun, laugh, enjoy the trading ride together. It's all in the name of good podcasting fun. So remember, take it easy, don't bet the farm, and keep your seatbelts on at all times. Thank you for listening. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the China Shop, home of the Band of Traders podcast. I'm Kyle, and today I've got Sanctum AI's Christian Crowley joining me. Recently got a chance to watch Christian speak at the Boston Blockchain Week 2024, and with our recent episodes on AIs and LLMs, it only made sense to get him on this program. How are you doing today, Christian? You've been keeping busy since Boston?
Yeah, great, Kyle. Thanks for having me on. It's been a pretty wild few weeks, but I thought that was a great event. Met some great people, yourself included. So it was been a fun fall so far, for sure. We've got a lot of things in the pipeline.
Yeah, you're in New York, right? So this wasn't, you're not local to Boston.
No, yeah, exactly. I'm based in Brooklyn, but my family still lives in the South Shore.
So I was visiting them,
and then kind of popped up to Quincy for the event. So it was a great little joint trip.
It's always nice when you get to see family out of that too.
Yeah.
So why don't you tell me about, let's start with like how you got into blockchain, and we'll kind of use that to springboard into what you guys are doing over at Sanctum.
Sure. Yeah. So I've been, I first jumped into blockchain probably back in late 2016, early 2017. Mm-hmm. Really was drawn in initially by the Ethereum white paper and some of the early projects that were kind of spun up around that ecosystem. I joined Consensus in 2017. And specifically one of their portfolio companies, it was called Alethio. We were building an analytics tool set for Ethereum. Mm-hmm. I went on to lead that project for about 2 years. And then while there, you know, super interesting experience, very, very early, the need for robust analytics, the need for refined data via API services was still pretty minimal. So we ultimately had to close that project.
I do remember 2016 and when Ethereum was kind of coming out, that was the one that got me kind of excited about the potential of blockchain. As I remember when Bitcoin was going, I just didn't really see much. I had a hard time justifying what the use case was with out of it. But we've been, when we did the Boston blockchain event, we were very, very diligent about not mixing crypto and blockchain together. And I noticed you were kind of doing something similar there. So was crypto ever of interest to you, or was it always the underlying technology?
I'd say the underlying tech really drew me in to start.
Yeah.
A good friend of mine was working on a project around utilizing blockchain technology to try to solve some of the challenges in journalism around misinformation and authenticity of and truthfulness of articles. And now, obviously, it's still very relevant today. And that project, unfortunately, did not work out, but the project was super interesting, and essentially it tried to tie content being pushed into the market with, you know, a rating system, economically incentivized around whether this is true or not. You know, it was very early, very interesting, and in trying to figure out, you know, how can you cut through, you know, other motives, you know, in a way that perhaps, you know, pulls in economics and incentives. And Ethereum was the foundation for that. It was really cool. It was an experiment. Back then, it was all just experiments. And part of that ethos and part of that excitement really pulled me in.
Yeah.
Right.
So then it looks like now you're trying to blend AI and language learning models with blockchain. So how are the two kind of complementing each other? What's the purpose of merging those two technologies?
Yeah, I mean, so just for context, so Sanctum really, what we built essentially is a privacy-minded, a privacy-focused AI tool set, and it lets you interact with large language models in a way that you interact with, say, ChatGPT, but you can do so entirely offline using just your device's compute. So essentially all your interactions, all your chats, all the documents you upload,
Google doesn't get to own those when we go through Sanctum?
Sadly, no. They can't use those to build a data profile of you or train their models further.
Yeah, that's been one of my biggest hangups with using the open source ones out there. It's like, what exactly are they doing with all the stuff I'm typing in there?
A lot.
Yeah.
So, I mean, right now, really, it's kind of a chat interface, and it can give you feedback on things like documents or questions you have. But, you know, we started thinking about the tie back into blockchain. There's a couple of different angles that we're looking at. So from the individual user standpoint, you know, if you're a digital asset trader, for example, you may have sophisticated strategies that you're looking to kind of pursue. Feedback could be useful. You can essentially pipe in trade history, transaction history, wallet activity, and you can actually interact with models that have essentially referenced this information. And for certain funds, for certain, you know, privacy-minded traders that don't want to just dump the wallets they're tracking, they don't want to just dump, you know, what they're looking at on chain into OpenAI's servers or Google's, Sanctum gives the opportunity to do that kind of in your own offline terminal. And then you can, you know, you can then trade based on feedback, or you can refine your strategy based on feedback. That's kind of step one. So you can do that today.
Yeah. Yeah.
Step two is, you know, there are interesting protocols launching now that are essentially building automated AI agents that can execute transactions on chain.
Okay.
One network is called the OLOS network that I think is really, really cool. And essentially you can create automated trading strategies that these AI agents will then pursue on your behalf with kind of no touch. And I think
that scares me.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. You can set certain conditions, you can kind of set certain thresholds, and it's even more sophisticated than just kind of setting parameters. It can kind of, what I've seen, really pursue like a strategy based on the thinking behind it, not just like a set of conditions.
What was, you said this was a specific project you were referencing there? What was the name of that one?
The one that I've been tracking pretty closely is the OLAS network, O-L-A-S.
OLAS.
They're a pretty impressive team, and they've done some really cool work in the space. We've been thinking about ways to potentially, you know, tie some of the utility of Sanctum to that. Mm-hmm. You know, would having a truly personal and private companion language model to help, you know, you essentially not just craft the strategy, but then is there a way to have that interact with the agent itself?
Well, there's many different ways you can interact with that. It doesn't just necessarily need to be like trading data. I could even upload like the journals that I take to analyze my emotions, and then maybe punch in like which markets types or what the markets were doing on those days. And then they could maybe even spit me out like, hey, these are certain days that you should probably stay away from the charts. You know,
100%, right? 100%, or yeah.
Help you identify some weaknesses that you can improve, or leaks, as Baba likes to call them.
Now that's really interesting. No, 100%. I mean, it's I'm sure you wouldn't want to put that content, you know, in the share that with Uncle Google, for example.
Yeah, giving that to Google is one thing. I don't mind sharing it with people who listen, because it takes a lot of effort to, you know, actually be able to understand what you're reading. But I just don't trust big companies, and I don't know if that's a is that a dying concern? Are people just getting more used to giving up control of their data? Because it seems like the younger people that I talk to now, when I say, oh, they're collecting your data, don't use that site or turn those cookies off, they don't give a shit. Yeah, whatever. I like getting better ads.
I mean, I don't want to be defeatist on this, or, you know, nihilist, but I do think that concerns around privacy are probably relatively lower substantially among the younger generation.
Yeah.
You know, at Sanctum, you know, we're running into some challenges around this trade-off between convenience and privacy, and how much, you know, do you index more towards privacy or more towards convenience? And, you know, it's interesting. Many in the crypto ecosystem will index more towards privacy and data autonomy.
Right.
And then, but the younger generation, the TikTok generation, Instagram, you know, heavy users, really, they kind of want convenience, instant gratification, and
you mentioned TikTok. You know, TikTok is the one. If you're using TikTok, you don't care about your data.
You do not care at all.
Yeah. Well, you know, you kind of speaking about some of the considerations that went in, I was able to download the tool, but it was a little overwhelming just seeing how many different options were on there when I was playing around with it. So it looks like what you do is you download the interface, and then you have the choice of downloading many different options for your language learning model. What are some of the considerations you should put in towards when you're trying to choose one for yourself?
Sure. Yeah. And just for context, when you download Sanctum, you're really downloading three things. You're downloading the Sanctum Vault, which is essentially the encrypted database for all your chats, all your interactions. We've actually built that based on the fork of a EVM compatible wallet. Mm-hmm. You're also downloading an interface to access large language models, like you mentioned. And you're downloading a RAG application, which allows you to upload documents and that allows you to interact with kind of, it allows the model to respond to your questions based on those documents.
So if I wanted to train it to have more of a trader mindset, I could feed it some of my favorite trading books and have it read
exactly. Yeah. Okay. So there's kind of steps. You can upload documents and have the model reference the content. Mm-hmm. You can take it one step further and you can actually tune the model, which is something we're working on right now with NVIDIA. You can tune the model based on that data set, so it becomes more of an expert mm-hmm. in that versus just being able to read it and respond based on the content. So it's one step further. That second part isn't currently available in Sanctum, but the first part is. Mm-hmm. But back to your question around how do you pick the model that's kind of best for your use case? So right now, when you download Sanctum, set an account up, the first thing you want to do is pick the model from kind of that models page. And we integrate with this website called Hugging Face, which basically is a repository of...
Love the names guys come up with in this field.
It's a repository of all kind of the available open source language models that you can get. And there's hundreds of them. And many of them some are more useful than others. Essentially, we try to recommend the best performing language models, and we also try to recommend the models that will work most effectively on your device based on your device's specs.
Yeah, I really appreciated that portion of it, because like I have no idea what I'm doing when it comes to choosing one of these. I remember one of the guests we had on was teaching us a little bit about them. I mean, most people, he said, are using what was the analogy used? A howitzer to mow your grass. Like most of them are just way overpowered for what we actually need them for.
I fully agree. And what's really cool is, so you can download, you know, the general purpose language models like Meta's Llama or Mistral has a couple models out there. I actually think Amazon just pushed one out. I'm not sure if it's open source. It's like today it came out. But anyway, there are also use case specific models that are on Hugging Face. So there are keywords and tags you can search for. So there are ones that have been.
Oh, okay.
It could be a version of the Llama model that's been trained specifically on certain information. And I think we're going to see the tooling that will allow companies and users to tune these models further on their own or mm-hmm. via a very simple process. Those tools will get more accessible and you'll be able to basically either upload your version of a model or if you want, tune it, make it, you know, your own proprietary and use that as kind of your companion for when you're making trades or when you're
need someone to cry to
or you need some support right. emotionally or
not saying that doesn't happen frequently. Next question I have for you then is all this was free. I didn't see anywhere where you were trying to charge me for anything. So if this is all free, like how do you guys make money with this company? Like, where's the revenue coming from?
Sure. Yeah. So right now, the Sanctum app itself is, as you mentioned, free to use entirely. Our overhead costs for Sanctum are minimal. There's no cloud expense, you know.
If everything's on your computer, then yeah, you're not paying.
It's very, you know, our goal here is to grow the number of users and basically spread the great word about private local AI.
Right.
We if you on our website, there's a section called Sanctum Labs. We pick up kind of blockchain development contracts once a quarter on the side because I didn't mention this, but this team I'm working with, we've been together for about 4 or 5 years, and we actually initially were working in blockchain and have deep expertise around building protocols and data products. So we're able to allocate some resources to building out those kind of projects, and that brings in some revenue and allows us to kind of keep the ship running.
But the basic idea is to build an ecosystem to where you can get a lot more of that kind of work in your, because people are going to want to move and put their stuff on here.
It's basically the market for private AI right now is small and it's early, and we're hoping to just, part of the game is staying alive until the market catches up.
Yeah.
The unfortunate reality is the big companies have not only the dollars, but they have the mind share and the visibility, and they're presenting these tools as if they're not just vacuuming up massive amounts of your data,
right?
In a way that may not cause you harm, but in some capacity could or could be used in a way that you do not intend. And we're reading these studies about employees at larger companies that are just dumping information into ChatGPT, and it's very clearly just a compliance violation. And if you're at a law firm, you're breaking your attorney client. But it's so new, and the downstream effects of what would happen if that leaked out are so distant that people are still doing it. So we're trying to say, you can still do that, but just keep it on your device, and
then you don't have to worry about it. Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So how are you guys, how's the reviews been? How are people enjoying the product, or what are they saying?
We have a lot of positive feedback from many of our users. I think, they kind of fall into two segments. There's the developer cohort, which I'll get into in a second. And then there's kind of the traditional ChatGPT user that wants to maintain their privacy.
Yes.
I'll start with the latter first. So the latter really appreciates kind of the package nature of being able to just pull this all down and then have a model running from your device out of the box.
It's quick. It takes like 5 minutes. It's ridiculous.
You could do this without Sanctum if you have a technical background, and it's very cumbersome. But when you want to layer in features like being able to upload long form documents in a variety of formats, you can't really manage that as like a Frankenstein app. So they kind of like this out of the box. The biggest issue is that the best available model right now is GPT-4o.
Mm-hmm.
And because OpenAI is running that with like a trillion servers, there's a performance difference between the best open source model and GPT-4o.
Right.
I can't lie about that. There is.
But like we said earlier, it's also way overpowered for many of the tasks that most people need it
exactly.
for.
Exactly. 100%. And I think the more people are kind of playing around with it and seeing that maybe this can better serve their niche, especially if they want to keep their autonomy over their data, but they're giving us great feedback. We just were rolling out, I think tomorrow, audio transcription. So, you can upload your Zoom call recordings. You can speak to Sanctum and it'll transcribe and then interact with the language model that way. So we're getting some good feedback on features we want to add to kind of the consumer facing app. On the developer side, we have a really cool feature in developer mode called the local API server.
Mm-hmm.
So what that lets you do, if you're coding an AI application that you want to incorporate a language model into, typically you'd pay for OpenAI's API service and you kind of bake that into your app and you build it that way. But with Sanctum, you can essentially spin up your own locally running API, build and test your application entirely offline, and it's running using a model that's running on your computer. So there's no need for internet connection. There's no need to rely on OpenAI servers. There's no risk of pre-production code being leaked, beforehand. So that's a pretty cool feature we pulled up for developers. We're looking to kind of expand upon that.
You mentioned the engineering team. I was looking through the Meetr team on there. I noticed a lot of Slavic names. I'm curious how did you guys all meet? Let's start with that.
Yeah, no. So most of the guys are originally from Ukraine.
Ukraine? Okay, really?
And many of them have moved to Poland. My co-founder had been working with a couple of the guys in a prior project.
Mm-hmm.
And so we kind of joined forces, and one of the guys who's from Ukraine recruited a couple other guys he knew and was friends with. And essentially, we're a very distributed team. I'm based in Brooklyn. My co-founder is based in the South, and we have the developers, many of whom were in Poland and Ukraine. And essentially, we kind of just started adding individuals that were either past coworkers or friends
mm-hmm.
that worked well together or that could co-locate occasionally. And it just kind of expanded from there. So we'd add a couple guys that knew each other, and then they knew some guys. And then all of a sudden we had this team that was just performing at an incredibly high level and largely in the same time zone. Like, our developer cohort is in pretty much the same time zone, and our kind of operations, fundraising, BD team largely is in, you know, East Coast time. So it works out well where we have...
Yeah, you got the engineers at a time when they can actually work without being annoyed or annoying people. Right. And then you've got you guys who are working when all the money's awake, which is kind of what you want, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
All right. Seems like that works out pretty good.
Been a great experience working with those guys. They're awesome.
So talk to me about some of the different ways that I can improve the way I interact with my LLMs. Like, what are some tips or some things that I can do to get better data out of it or more trustworthy answers?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I mean, something I'm still constantly trying to improve myself. I think when these language models first came out, or I think when there's kind of pre-GPT-3 and then post-GPT-3, like, it's kind of eras. And I think after GPT-3.0, and these things were actually really useful, or you could see how they become really useful. You know, you probably heard of this idea of prompt engineering and how to structure the kinds of ways you interact with.
I think they call them priming statements, where you kind of like give it a scenario. You say you are the developer of this app and you're working on this project with this deadline.
Speaking of my own experience, I found, you know, starting a conversation with an example, like, you know, just one example, we're trying to figure out some product refinements, for example, for Sanctum. We're trying to roll out, you know, over Q1 2025. Mm-hmm. And then it's essentially you try to isolate the persona of your target user. So I could kind of, you know, individual lawyer, for example, and try to highlight up front key concerns they're facing, pain points in their job, and kind of laying out what our application does, what we think we can do, trying to essentially provide as much background context up front as essentially that priming statement. And it may seem like it takes a long time to kind of input all this information, but, you know, what I found is that instead of just jumping into a conversation and asking a question, like, this has led to far superior results. And it's actually helped us make some product decisions as we kind of...
Oh, so you're using your LLMs to improve your LLMs. That's kind of wild. We are,
yeah. I think, you know, tweaking how you prompt or set the persona of the responding LLM has been really important.
The other thing too is you can save those prompts. You don't have to craft them and then forget about them. You can throw 100%. Them into a Word document and keep them all ready to go again.
You can even, and there's ways you can, speaking for Sanctum, you can create essentially templates or prior chats that you can revisit in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
Based on, you know, kind of those priming statements. But, you know, I think that for me has been the most kind of powerful way to use these tools. Also, you know, within Sanctum, for example, I'm learning so much during this process, but there's a range of other models that actually interact with each other behind the scenes, which is really cool.
What do you mean? Can you explain that?
So how we approach allowing you to interact with a PDF or a spreadsheet that you upload to Sanctum is really interesting. Essentially, you drop, you know, this PDF, say it's a earnings report or what have you, a company, into Sanctum. And what that essentially triggers is a smaller model. It's called an embeddings model. Mm-hmm. And what it does is it essentially chunks that document into 300 to 400 character blocks. And it analyzes and kind of ascribes what amounts to a label for those blocks based on, say, keywords. It's not keywords, but it's kind of like content, and stores that label. It's a number,
sort of like indexing the content almost.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. It's coding and indexing the content in a vector database that essentially stores the information in a way that's much more accessible for the other large language model to access. So when you input a question about that document, the same embedding model will actually code your question and then cross-reference what you've input to that vector database and bubble to the top the most relevant chunks And that allows the language model to essentially pull the best content to the front.
Wow. So it's really just like a time saver. It probably cuts down on
in many ways. Yes. In many ways, yes. You know, if you put in, you know,
500 characters at a time of exactly. a book. Yeah.
If you do the same thing online, you're essentially sharing that same 400 page private document online. Because they have limitless compute, they don't have to do any of that. They can essentially ingest and synthesize every character of that document and provide a response that way. Now, there are performance trade-offs, obviously, and there are privacy trade-offs. So I think our challenge is we hope that these open source language models will continue to improve, and the gap between the leading closed source model and the leading open source model will narrow further. So any sort of performance issues will kind of diminish over time.
Yeah, and that's usually how that works, right? You got your tech leaders, but then as time passes, that lead tends to evaporate unless they're really, really good at what they do.
Or they create some regulatory moat.
You say that like that's not happened before. What are some of the things that maybe they're not good at doing? What are some things that maybe we shouldn't be looking to AI for answers?
Right now, I mean, anything that has meaningful, medical diagnoses, like stay away from that for now. I think there's a lot of things we're reading. I'm reading about how, you know, it's better at image analysis, mm-hmm. Looking at certain kinds of things, certain cancers, those kinds of things. I think that it's one piece, it's one tool that I think, medical professionals can use as part of their tool set, but to try to combine inputs, multimodal inputs at this stage to try to create some sort of diagnosis that patients can then act upon, I think it's too early and it's probably.
I think VenturePoint has done something. We talked to them about 3 or 4 years ago, and they were working on an AI analysis of like heart stuff.
Oh, wow.
But it was very specific what they were doing. They had built very specific imaging devices and their own models to analyze and interpret that data. So I could see it being much, much more useful if it's very, very niche. But if you're talking about like GP level of diagnosis, you're probably going to struggle to get something like that from AI at this point in time.
I agree. I mean, I think the distinction really is, you know, AI to help someone do their job better versus AI to do their job.
Yes.
Instead of them. And I think people love to rush to the latter and say, oh, we're almost there. We're there. I think there's going to be, you know, it'll vary by industry, but there's going to be a period of time where people realize this will allow me to do my job better. And those who learn it, leverage it, will be successful. I think, you know, and that may result in the reduction of positions or something. But I think, like, people always want to jump to say, oh, this is going to replace doctors or lawyers. There's a lot of complexity that I think these language models aren't good at organizing and kind of creating in a cohesive manner. And I think we're a ways away from that, or at least until there's some jump step improvement that changes it all. We'll see.
One of the things I heard somebody say, and I think I agree with it. It makes sense, but the LLMs are not for creating content. They're for analyzing content. So when you try to use a AI or a language learning model to create something for you, you're going to get some really weird stuff out of it.
I think I'd say analyzing or replicating. I think you can use them to replicate things.
That's a good point.
Replicate and maybe add certain nuances. Degrees of differences. But net creation, I think, is net new creative kind of content, I think, is still... always. I actually saw this really interesting clip that Ben Affleck put out describing this conundrum, just basically around how, like, if you these models have been trained on hours and hours of history. I mean, of movies and TV and YouTube, and, you know, they're very good at essentially ingesting, analyzing that, and kind of creating a aggregated replication of this. But something truly net new that's coherent and interesting, entertaining, and not just crazy, I think it's still a ways away.
Yeah. You ever watch that Seinfeld one they had going for a while? It was like a animated version of
Bizarre,
just 24 yeah. hours nonstop.
Bizarre. Yes. Yeah, yeah.
That's some funny moments, but if you were judging that on the aggregate of all it's put out, it was not very good.
Right, right. Yeah. I feel like even some of the short form video ones, like, you know, people will pick and choose the ones that are like the cream of the cream of the crop. And,
right.
Yeah. You know,
yeah. There's a lot of trash that gets left behind.
Yeah. And it's, so there's that too.
I have been impressed with something like Udio, some of the AI generation, like music stuff that they've got out there. Some of those things are really neat, but I mean, again, you try to create something new out of that, you get some really wacky results. You could probably get about 10 really terrible ones for every good one that you pull out of it.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree. I mean, some of the music stuff is pretty interesting. Some of like the holiday music crossovers.
But I tell you what it won't do. It's not going to create a new genre.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where I think the main limitation is. But anyway, any other thoughts to leave us on with? Well, actually, before we wrap up here, you mentioned NVIDIA. You were kind of teasing something there with a project with them. And I feel like you kind of have to tell us a little bit more about what's going on there. I know NVIDIA is one of the big leaders in AI.
Yeah, no, they've been a partner. We've been trying to figure out an approach to what's called local fine tuning.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a model that's been trained on, you know, a ton of information. And then you produce that kind of leads to the large language model, but then you can version that by tuning it on specific data sets. And we're trying to figure out, is there a way we can actually do this using the local compute or do it in a way that's more privacy minded than kind of the way you'd do it if you were to just upload the data and ask, you know, a larger web-based model to kind of.
You almost need a community of people who share the same goal to share their computing powers with each other.
Right, right.
Yeah. Because that is the trade-off, right? You're going to lose a lot of the aggregate processing power if you're going to try to keep everything local.
Right. You know, it's either slower or the result is not as strong.
Mm-hmm.
But we've been working with them on a couple of things. We fine-tuned a version of Llama using the CoinGecko API. For example, to kind of create, you know, a trading companion language model. Now, you'd have to find a way to maintain that,
mm-hmm.
retune it, and do so in a way that was, you know, efficient. And there's probably a business model there,
right.
potentially if you want to have a, you know, the model because the language model itself was only trained up to a certain point, but you could tune it on smaller subsets of data that could be near real time, and that potentially could be the you know, a way to position as an interesting kind of extra tool in your tool set for trading, for instance.
Okay. So then now with everything that we've talked about here then, so which LLM model would be best if I was looking to do some of the stuff that we talked about with trading, like using it to analyze maybe some of my favorite books, or if I wanted to be able to feed it some earnings reports, like you mentioned, and have it be able to spit out some analysis, which one do you think would be best at doing that?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, to start, I'd start with Llama 3.2. It's general purpose,
mm-hmm.
but it's probably a good starting point. It's probably the closest thing we have to GPT-4 right now. Now, I haven't candidly sorted through all the available models.
Well, there's hundreds of them. It's
right,
yeah,
right. I mean, I think you could do a keyword search on certain model types. I think financial analysis or finance is one of the tags you could pull up.
Okay.
And you may find a modified or tuned version of Llama 3 or Mistral has a really good open source model out. I'd start there, but you know, I think phase one is just getting used to, you know, using the. I mean, you could basically download Sanctum and you kind of have take a flight and you have an AI companion you could use on the airline, for example. I mean, whether it's you're coding an app or you're
you can put it on your phone.
Not on your phone, but you can turn the the Wi-Fi off on your laptop.
Yeah, okay.
The issue with the phone right now
is size, right?
I mean, Apple's trying to adjust some of this with their Apple Intelligence stuff, and we'll see how that goes. And you know what model they use? They're probably going to use their own model and keep it kind of
probably in the cloud and collect all your data.
Right. But we are trying to figure out potentially is there a way to have just an interface that can sync with your computer and still have your computer run the compute and then interact that way.
Kind of like remote desktoping in almost.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And we haven't quite figured out the most kind of an elegant approach to that, mm-hmm. because, you know, without having your device and your laptop yeah. and phone in the same place. So we're trying to figure that out, but that's something we're still working on.
Well, I'm excited for that one. If you do figure that one out, you got to come back and let me know.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
But I do think that's probably about as good a place as any to wrap things up here. Christian, great. Anything that you want to, any place you want to point people to? Do you have any other materials out there besides Sanctum AI that they can go to, podcasts, YouTube appearances, anything you want to throw out?
No, you know, I think we'll be pushing out more video content pretty soon.
Do you have a YouTube channel?
It's minimal.
Okay.
we're recording a demo once we release this kind of voice integration piece, but we're trying to post more on Twitter and LinkedIn.
Yeah. Okay.
You can find the latest stuff we have there, but I would just encourage, you know, try Sanctum out, join our Discord, give us some feedback. You know, we're a small team, but we ship pretty fast. So, you know, always welcome the feedback and what ways we can improve the product.
I think that's great, man. Well, please thank me and joining Christian for taking the time to chat with us. You can go visit sanctum.ai if you enjoy working with LLMs and you want your data secure. You can stay up to date with the podcast by visiting banditraderspodcast.com, or you can browse through our huge back catalog by guest. And I will be back soon with another exciting episode for you to like, share, and subscribe. But until then, remember to be polite to your AIs now before the uprising. You will thank me later.
Thanks, Kyle.
This podcast is intended for informational and educational purposes only, does not constitute financial or investment advice, and should not be construed as such. The hosts, guests, and contributors of this podcast are not licensed financial advisors, brokers, or professionals. Any trading or investment decisions made based on the content of this podcast are solely at the listener's discretion and risk. Trading and investing in financial markets carry inherent risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Listeners should conduct their own research and seek advice from qualified financial professionals before making any financial decisions. The views, opinions, and information shared in this podcast are those of the individual contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views or policies of the podcast creators or associated organizations. Produced by China Shop Productions.